Welcome to the Clear Admit MBA Admissions Podcast. I'm Graham Richmond, and this is your wiretaps for Monday, July 13th, 2020. I'm joined by Alex Brown. Alex, how are things?
Very good. Thank you, Graham.
So there's a ton going on. Again, I just keep waiting for that summer break moment, but it's not, I don't think it's ever going to come this year, given, you know, COVID-19 and everything else. But the thing that you alerted me to that I wanted to talk about is some of the stuff going on with start dates. And do you want to talk at all about Darden? I guess there was some noise on the wires yesterday about what Darden's doing with their kind of semester next year and the structure.
Yeah, I won't say yesterday, Graham, because I know we're recording this ahead of when it gets published in a few days. But
that's right.
last week, I'll refer to. But yeah, we saw some admits for Darden, and they're for folks starting in the January start date. So I had to do a little bit of digging after that to sort of figure out what's going on. And yeah, sure enough, a month or a month and a half ago, Darden did announce that they were going to be flexible with start dates for a select population of admitted students that could then start in January. They would actually do a bit of career management work before they begin and then get into that sort of core curriculum through January into a bit of the summer and have an abbreviated internship over the summer. So it's very interesting. As you know, our listeners know, this is a very fluid situation.
Yeah.
We're still, embroiled in the COVID-19 situation. We know the numbers in the United States right now do not look good in terms of what's going on with the pandemic. So schools are hedging. Schools, I would say, are probably a little bit nervous in terms of truly what's going to happen. This upcoming fall, and there's still a lot of uncertainty with the applicant population.
Yeah, I think I would say that, you could look at where a school's located and argue that, in the U.S. there are just certain hotspots now in the South and California, Arizona, etc. But the problem is, these schools bring people together from, all around the U.S. and around the world. So yeah, everyone's kind of, waiting to see how this is all going to work. And, I think the other thing that happened last week that's disappointing, at least to me, is that the U.S. government is basically now saying that if a school is online, that an international student in that school's program, so, someone who's not American, cannot get a visa to be, it can't be in the U.S., basically. So they're supposed to do online exclusively from home. So there's this issue around, obviously, if you're a new student, maybe it's not a big of a deal. You just don't ever come to campus until they open up for in-person. But, that's kind of fraught with some trouble. But if you're a second-year student, for example, then what are you supposed to do? You have to leave the, it's a whole, so I've noticed that already MIT and Harvard universities are, have actually filed suit with the U.S. government to block this measure. So we'll see where that goes. But it's crazy. And I'm seeing all kinds of things, even with the undergraduate institutions, different plans for, starting up in the fall. I saw one undergraduate college who's going to just have freshmen and sophomores, and then the juniors and seniors are going to be online for the most part. There's just a lot going on. And as you correctly point out, it's very fluid. We'll keep an eye on it. And I think it's interesting what Darden's doing. So it sounds like, as you described it, those folks who start in January would still graduate on time. They would just do a little bit in the summer to kind of catch up. Is that the plan, or would they graduate later?
Yeah, I mean, the news story I read when I went to sort of do a little bit of digging suggests that they'll do a little bit of career management stuff before they begin in January, and then their January term will roll into a little bit of the summer, and then they'll do a more abbreviated internship to then sort of go into lockstep with the second, their second year classmates, or at least that's how I understood what I read.
Got it.
But again, this is all very fluid. Let's hope over the next several weeks we start to see a little bit of more certainty in terms of what's going on.
Yeah, that's a good point. The other stuff I wanted to just mention is that we had our second class for the Admissions Academy last week, and it was about choosing schools, you know, what rounds to apply in, how many, you know, how many schools, what kinds of schools. So that was a lot of fun. We talked at length about rankings, which you and I get very passionate about. And I wanted to remind people that the third class in the Admissions Academy, which you can still sign up for on our website, I believe, is going to be, I guess, in about a week and a day. And it's going to be on essays.
Yeah.
And, you know, essay writing. And I think, again, you know, when you look at the list of classes we're offering in this academy, this is one of the ones that jumps off the page at me. I mean, you know, everyone needs advice on how, you know, how to best position themselves via their essays. So we're going to have a lot of fun with that class. And I encourage people to join in. And yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I know we still have some work to do, you and I, but we'll get there. So the other thing that's going on is we continue to roll out our admissions director Q&As, and Chicago Booth has been published on the site with Donna Swinford. That was a terrific interview. And so there are more in the pipeline. As everyone knows, we've already done Harvard and Wharton and Cambridge and Siebes. So there's just more coming. And so stay tuned to the website for that. And then the last thing I wanted to mention before we dive in to the wiretaps portion of the show here is that we've gotten some reviews of our podcast. So, like, I don't know what happened. Everyone woke up. I think I've been bugging people so much in our episodes that we finally got some reviews. And I thought I would read a couple of them out as a way to say thank you to those who submitted them. So there's one that came in, you know, last week from someone named Keaton SLO9, and they just wrote, "Great content. I've been listening to Graham and Alex for the past 6 months. Not only do I enjoy the sage advice they provide, but they also make sure to provide actionable next steps MBA candidates can take to better their admissions profiles. I highly recommend this podcast to anyone pursuing an MBA." So that was good. It's always nice to hear that. And I, you know, I praise this person for tolerating us for 6 months. That's a long,
yes,
long
that's
time.
Fantastic.
And then there were a couple of other short ones. There was a review from Akash. And this person said, "Great podcast, extremely insightful, extremely helpful podcast led by two engaging hosts." I wonder if those were maybe one of the days that we had, you know, an external host or something they're thinking of. But and then there was another one that just said, "Amazing resource for applicants. This podcast is full of useful and insightful information for prospective MBA students. It's eye-opening and allows the individual to understand the ins and outs of the MBA process." So I think it's great to get these reviews, but I also think that review in particular just made me realize that, you know, we're almost running like a case method style approach to admission strategy, you know, because we're taking real people, we're looking at their backgrounds. And I think the idea is that if you listen to this podcast over the course of a season, you're going to hear little, you know, drips and drabs of characteristics that people have that mesh with your own candidacy. And you're going to learn how to position yourself as a result of that. So it hadn't really occurred to me, but I love the fact that this is almost like a, yeah, like a Harvard kind of case method approach to MBA admission strategy.
Yeah, no, fantastic. And yeah, thanks to those three folks for providing the reviews, because at the end of the day, that does sort of fuel us a little bit more to do what we're doing. But also hopefully folks recognize, and I think we talked about this a little bit before, Graham, but you know, we're passionate about this stuff. And you know, I'm hoping that passion sort of comes through, that we enjoy doing what we're doing. And for folks that want to be featured on Wiretaps, if the way the process works is simply, if you go to the Clear Admit site and seek out the Apply Wire aspect of the site, the Apply Wire tool, and post your profile on Apply Wire, and maybe in the notes just say, "Please feature us on Wiretaps," then that's what will happen.
Yeah, we're open to begging. Yeah. It's totally fine. So yeah, so we'll get your profiles on the air if you share them on the site. So let's move on. And so you've picked out actually three ApplyWire folks. They've been coming in at a pretty rapid pace in recent days. So I think it's good to knock some of these out. These are all folks who are going to be applying, you know, for business school in the coming season. And I think we're, you know, really officially kind of turning the page here onto the next season, as I've been saying for the last couple of weeks here. So let's start and dive in. And this is Wiretaps candidate number one. So this person's looking at seven schools. They've got Berkeley, Duke, Harvard, Kellogg, Stanford, UCLA, and UVA. And they want to start in the fall of 2021. They've been working in retail and consumer goods, and they would love to get over to tech or maybe even continue in consumer goods and in the longer term do something entrepreneurial. The companies that they mention having an interest in are Apple, Google, Patagonia, North Face, so kind of a mix there of outdoors, kind of consumer goods versus tech companies. They have a 3.63 GPA from undergrad, and they've been working for 4 years. They're located in Arkansas, and they are interested in maybe working a bit on one of the coasts or returning to Arkansas. And, you know, they do mention that in the long term, they really want to be in the southern part of the United States, either Arkansas or Texas. And so they're thinking like, okay, I'll do brand management, for the short term, maybe with, you know, on one of the coasts, or they don't seem as fussed about that. But then in the long term, they really want to help develop the southern part of the U.S. and provide opportunities to people in that region. So what did you make of this candidacy? Because they, you know, it's not so often that we get an app kind of profile from someone from Arkansas who's actually working in that market and then wants to return there and do big things. So what's your point of view on this candidate and how they stack up?
Yeah, super interesting, actually. A shout out to Arkansas. I spent a winter in Hot Springs, Arkansas, in one of my previous lives, working in the at the racetrack there.
Well, yes. I didn't even know this. Wow. Okay.
Yes.
It's also isn't it? It's also where Walmart is headquartered, I believe, in Bentonville, Arkansas. So it's a
I think you're right with that one too. But yeah, no. So I'm very interesting part of the United States that I have a lot of a lot of love for. Quite frankly, Graham, I think this is a super candidate. So they have a good undergraduate record. It looks like 3.63, the right amount of work experience. It looks like they've done some interesting work experience and so on and so forth. They want to have an impact in that region of the United States. And, you know, looking at that sort of social responsibility aspect, and they want to sort of build and develop their career without compromising and feeling that they have to go to one of the coasts or one of the big urban centres in order to do that in the long run and sort of develop that further in Arkansas or Texas, I think they said, which is obviously in close proximity or reasonably close proximity. So I actually have some admiration for that, and they haven't taken the GMAT yet. But it's been delayed a little bit, obviously, through COVID-19. But I would say, Graham, two things. If they knock the GMAT out of the ballpark, get the average score for the top schools, and come up with, and we talked about this, well, you addressed it with me, actually, as we were getting ready for this podcast, a little bit more substance behind that long-term goal.
Yeah. Right?
Rather than, as you said, rather than saying, you know, I want to make an impact in this region, the United States, by doing, and that's my long-term goal. We want to, I think the AdCom will want to know a little bit more exactly how they see their vision playing out. So what type of business, what type of impact, and so on and so forth, I think would really add a lot of quality to this candidacy. If this candidate does, like I say, knock the GMAT out of the ballpark and comes up with a little bit more of a developed long-term goal, because the short-term goal can be fine, and you know, you talk about things like Patagonia and North Face being different to Apple and Google, but the reality is, these sort of outdoor wear firms have a lot of tech related to them, right? You know, in terms of their marketing and so on and so forth, you know, their apps and et cetera. So I can see the case for these types of companies together. But yeah, so a bit more on that long-term goal, not the GMAT out of the ballpark. And I think this could be a super interesting candidate, Graham.
So I had a couple of thoughts related to this. So I think, as we discussed prior to recording, you know, the goals need some refining. Like, I think they're admirable in the broad brushstrokes, but I want to understand what kind of business are they hoping to build and what domain just some, they don't need like a business plan. Obviously, they're just writing some essays for business school. They don't need to submit an investor deck or something. But I just would, it would be helpful to have a better understanding of what they think they might be doing, like either function or industry wise, or ideally both. That was the first thing. The second thing was this whole GMAT issue. So they haven't taken the test, and they mentioned in their note that part of the reason for that is that they'd had it scheduled back in April, but it was canceled because of COVID-19 and the fact that the GMAT wasn't, they just closed the test centers, right? So, but since that time, the GMAT's been available online, I believe since late April, and it continues to be available online. I believe for now they've already extended testing dates into August where you can take it online. And so my part of me was just sort of thinking, if this person is worried about their August test date getting canceled, I would move to just schedule it online and get it done, because I they don't have to apply in round one, but I think if you're able and ready, like, do it. It's never hurts to be in the first round. And so I was a little puzzled about the GMAT approach here, because I think if I were this person, I've been studying, I was ready to take it in April and I couldn't, I would want to get it done. And I think, the online at home experience is actually not that different than in person, in the sense that you're taking this test on a computer either way. It's not like we're in a paper and pencil era where it used to be, you go when you sit down in a room. So I would encourage this person to get it done and to apply in round one and to firm up their goals. But I agree with you. If they can, do well on the test, they have a lot of doors open for them schools wise and based on their background and interest in the southern portion of the U.S. So, really interesting profile. Appreciate them sharing that.
Yeah, very good.
All right, so let's talk about Wiretap's candidate number two. So this person listed just one school, and that is Kellogg, and an intake year they want to start in the fall of 2021. But I just want to mention they're looking for advice about other schools. So they know Kellogg's on the list and they don't really know beyond that. So part of their question here was where else might they consider. This person is an architect and has been working in that field for it looks like 5 years. And they want to pivot out of architecture and into tech. And their GMAT score is a 710. GPA is 3.53. They'd love to either be in New York or on the West Coast after business school. And, as I mentioned, they're looking for help to find MBA programs that like match their career plan. And, they have this kind of background in architecture, but they want to transition into tech product management. And they love Kellogg's MMM program, which some of our listeners are probably familiar with. But obviously, it's a really good program that sort of combines the exact skills that they would need to sort of do this pivot. Beyond Kellogg, they mentioned they have Ross and Stern kind of on the radar, but they're just sort of wondering, what else might be out there. They mentioned they're taking a certificate course in tech project management as a way to kind of get exposed to that industry. What was your take? You had some back and forth with this poster on the website. So what did you think of this candidacy?
Yeah, I mean, it's quite interesting. Again, we talked about this a little bit before we came on air. Is the architecture background is actually, I think it's relatively novel in the MBA admissions process. It's quite interesting, and actually I think it could be a real positive in terms of the admissions process for what a candidate like this could bring to the table. I understand their concern and their desire to get into tech product management. The idea that you have a little bit wider scope of influence and impact if you're designing a product for one of these big tech companies than you might if you're designing a building in a city or something like that, right?
Yeah.
So I get why they might want to do what they're doing, but as we discussed before we came on air, Graham, they shouldn't talk down to their experience as an architect. There's probably some really interesting stuff that they can bring to the table based on their architect experience and so forth. So I think that could be really interesting. I think the key though here, and I'd like to get your feedback on this, Graham, if you're wanting to go into tech product management, generally you're going to want to have an engineering degree and an engineering training to prepare yourself for a tech product management career, or at least that's how I understand the pathway. So I'll bounce it back to you, Graham. is this person doing the right things to prepare themselves for a career in tech product management?
I mean, I think the fact that they're earning the certificate will help. I guess, you know, I don't know enough about, like, what is the traditional path into that. Like, I think, you know, a lot of people, you know, are kind of computer science folks or engineers, like you're saying, and then they kind of end up in a managerial role because they rise in the ranks and gradually do less coding and more managing. But I feel like...
But they still got to speak to the coding folks. That's right, the key, they gotta, right?
Yeah.
It's like you have to have the respect from the engineers and you have to be able to talk their language as well as talking the language of you know, folks above you and so on and so forth. And I think that's why generally the folks in these positions are ex-engineers and coders themselves.
Right. And I think the thing that jumped out at me when I first saw this post was... you know, there are a handful of programs that are like specifically designed for this sort of stuff, right? So you've got, like, Cornell has a tech MBA, NYU has one, which is on this person's list, I guess. Although I don't know if they're looking at the tech MBA at NYU or just the regular, but it's so there are some programs. Although I would also argue that the very top schools, you know, the MITs, the, you know, Stanfords, Whartons, etc., they're also really able to help someone make this kind of pivot. And I think as long as this person's doing things like, you know, they're pursuing the certificate, ideally some of their activities between now and when they would graduate from business school or when they would, you know, be really pitching for that full-time role, if they continue to, you know, pursue this kind of stuff, it should be fine. And as you said, the thing that jumped out at me is the architecture background. I would hate to see them kind of waste that as they go through the admissions process. And the reason I mention that is because I actually, when I was at Wharton, one of the guys on my learning team was an architect. And, you know, he had a really interesting background and just, I mean, completely, you know, I had like a consultant on my team, a couple of bankers, you know, there was an entrepreneur, like it was a mix of folks, but the architect had really just such a like different path, you know, having already been to grad school, etc. So I did wonder, like, how did this person do if they have an architecture degree? Is, you know, do they have a separate GPA and is it better than the one that they shared with us, which isn't bad, right? They have a 3.53, but I was curious about that. And then the other thing I did wonder about is the GMAT score. So 7.10 is fine, but it's going to be below average at some of the very best schools, including Kellogg, which is on their list. And so I wondered whether they felt that could be nudged up by a retake. And I think you mentioned that too when you had the dialogue with them. And I would love to know, like, what's the breakdown on that GMAT score? Like, how did they do on the math section versus the verbal? So I think there's some potential, like, weaknesses that I would love for them to be able to address. But I do like the overall profile. Like, I think it's fascinating to come from that background and that they would have a lot to add in the classroom. And I was just looking for them to find a way to actually blend together this architecture background with this desire to be involved in tech, rather than to make it like, oh no, I'm getting out of architecture and into tech because I don't really want to do architecture anymore. So anyway, that's my two cents on them. But it's an interesting candidacy for sure.
Yeah, and there are related skills, right, in terms of architecture, design.
Yeah.
And tech product management. I mean, you know, you're architecting a tech product and you're designing a tech product and so on and so forth. So there's got to be a lot of related skills in that. They did suggest that extracurriculars are the weakest element of their candidacy. How important is that in this case, Graham?
Yeah, I noticed that. And they did say that they do a lot of outdoor activity, like exercise and, you know, sports-related stuff, I guess. But I find that, you know, as long as someone's active, like, I think sometimes people get confused and they think, oh, extracurriculars means I'm at the soup kitchen every weekend, or I'm, you know, doing Habitat for Humanity or something that's like social interest. Whereas, you know, I've seen a lot of great candidates who, you know, they just happen to run triathlons, or they're, you know, an avid cyclist and they've organized a group of, you know, fellow cyclists to get out once a week or whatever. So there are ways to show leadership and engagement that don't have to be like traditional kind of community service stuff. So I don't know, I'd want to talk to this person or get more detail about what it is that they do when they go outside. Maybe they're, you know, a rock climber or whatever, but I feel like they can probably put something together. They may also just have some outside interests in art and design and architecture that could be woven into the storyline. So I'm less worried about that. I'm actually more worried about how they pitch their story, and the test score. And those are the two things, because I think if they get all that right, then suddenly you've got a lot of schools that could be possible, and they probably need to decide whether they want to take the actual tech MBA route with a Cornell or an NYU or the MMM at Kellogg, or if they want to cast an even wider net and look at some just traditional MBA programs like MIT or Stanford or even Carnegie Mellon or something. So there are a lot of schools out there that could help them. That's for sure. I just want to make sure they get the story right.
Very good. Very good.
All right, let's move on to our final wiretaps candidate. So this is wiretaps candidate number three. This person is targeting six MBA programs, which include Harvard, Michigan, Kellogg, Stanford, Chicago, and Yale, and they want to start in the fall of 2021. They've been working in nonprofit social impact stuff, and they want to get into consulting in the short term after business school and then back into the nonprofit social impact domain. GMAT score 740, GPA 3.83. They have 4 years of work experience, and they are located in Chicago. And the notes offer actually a lot of additional detail. So this is a white female. She mentions that the undergraduate GPA is from a top five undergrad. I assume that's what T5 stands for. And she majored in social sciences. And she says she comes from a very unusual but sexy sounding social impact nonprofit in a trendy area that on its own does not have a clear path to an MBA. In fact, most people with her background, she points out, would go to law school. And she says she's hoping to do a stint in consulting, as I mentioned, before going back into social impact. She's particularly interested in closing the race and gender wealth gap, and that's actually related to her current line of work. So, yeah, what did you, you mentioned, you kind of commented on this profile on the site, but what's your point of view? I mean, one of the things she did say, she wants to end up in the Midwest. And so that's why she has kind of a Midwest focused on a lot of these schools. But what's your take on this candidacy?
Well, I think we can wrap up this episode by saying good luck at whichever school she wants to attend, because I think this is an absolutely fantastic profile with good execution on the app. So it's obviously not guaranteed. They've got to work hard to present their story and probably work a little bit harder on that aspect because they are sort of slightly unorthodox candidate. They said that the pathway is more typical for law school. I mean, Graham, I hate to say it, but for the last several weeks, I've been watching Suits, which is all about the legal whatever in New York. It's an incredible world. But nevertheless, I digress. But when she mentioned law school, I was thinking, yeah, I know those folks because I keep watching Suits every night. But no, absolutely. This is the sort of candidate I think that top schools really want to bring in to their programs because they add a little bit of diversity in terms of their career experience and so on and so forth. They obviously have a very strong social impact angle, which again, if you look at the mission statements for all top schools, they're looking for folks like this. And that's what I really push candidates to do when they really first start exploring business schools and their choice of business schools. Read the school's mission statements. See if you really fit in terms of what they're looking for, in terms of how they serve the world and their alumni and so on and so forth. I reckon this person has a great opportunity to go to whichever school she chooses with great execution on the application. And obviously, her numbers back it up, right, Graham? I mean, 383 with a 740 GMAT. Frankly, Graham, fantastic candidate with great execution.
Now you're making me wonder if we should be offering, TV recommendations on this on this podcast.
Well, I was just curious about our princess who stole Harry and took him to the United States. So I had to learn more about her. I thought the easiest way to learn about her is spend about 2 months every night watching three or four episodes of Suits because it's got nine series to it.
Oh no,
it's
okay,
crazy.
Got it. So this is an interesting case. Like, I agree with you that this person's work experience and undergraduate profile, GMAT, everything like lines up perfectly. She mentioned that, she has a light quant background because she was kind of social, I guess, social sciences major. And so I would be curious to know, like, you know, how was the quant score on the GMAT, and what, if any, quant courses did she take? But I still think that that's like a minor thing. I really think she can kind of, you know, write her own ticket to any of these schools. There were two things that jumped out to me, though. One is that, you know, like you say, she'll need to execute and have a storyline. And I love the idea, at least, that she's sort of hinting at, that her long-term goal does actually fit in some ways with what she's doing now, but that she's going to first, you know, route that all through consulting and working with kind of the business, the kind of for-profit sector. So I love that idea. I think she can do it. And she'll, you know, as we've said, she can probably get into any school that she would like. The thing that I was a little worried about is she mentioned that, you know, she's really focusing on the Midwest because she wants to return there. And my view is that this person probably should go to, you know, Stanford or Harvard or Wharton or one of the like very best schools. And then I'm sure that, you know, the Midwest will happily have her back after that. Like I'm not, I guess I'm a little worried about this regional focus because, you know, I just want to make sure she goes to the absolute best school that she can get into, and that will help her to achieve her goals. And so that just, you know, and obviously she has Yale on the list, which is, you know, a noted school in this domain too. There are others out there, Berkeley, and some of the schools that we've already mentioned. But I just, yeah, I was a little worried that she might want to just think about like where are the best schools that she could go to that would help her achieve her goals, and know that by going to a top any top five MBA program, she can go back to Chicago. That's not going to be an issue. So that's the only other thing I was thinking about with respect to this candidate. But again, great background. And, you know, admissions officers stay up late at night trying to figure out ways to lure people who are on that law school or public policy path or even PhD path to come and get an MBA. And so she fits right into this category. I mean, I literally cannot tell you how many admissions directors I've spoken with who are like, how do we, you know, how can we get the message out so that some of these kids that might go to law school actually, you know, change course and think about an MBA and all, and how useful it is and how, you know, flexible it is. So again, I think she's kind of a dynamite candidacy. So we'll see how it goes.
Well, one quick final thing, I'd forgotten that she had this concern, so I'll bounce it to you, Graham, is,
Okay.
you know, her recommenders, they're not, you know, they don't know about writing recommendations for MBA programs. They,
Right.
you know, that this is new territory for them. So what sort of advice would you provide this candidate in terms of how she should be sort of positioning all this and getting the recommenders not only on board, but to provide the
Yeah.
substantial recommendations that will add value to her candidacy?
Yeah, and this is a great point for anybody who has recommenders. Maybe you're an entrepreneur, or maybe you're, you know, working in a non-traditional area. If you have a recommender that's never written a rec for business school before, that can be scary, right? So what I would say, and I mean, I hate to make a like a blatant plug like this, but the Clear Admit Recommendation Guide is awesome for this. We even have content in there that we recommend you share with your recommenders to kind of bring them up to speed on like what is an MBA recommendation letter and how should they go about presenting your candidacy. And, you know, at the end of the day, what she needs to do is furnish her recommenders with a whole bunch of stuff to help them make this happen. So one of those things is going to be a list of anecdotes. So a list of things that she's done while working for that person to help jog their memory and also to help underline the importance of the recommender, including stories rather than just a blank praise. So that's one thing. And then another thing is just to explain, you know, to the recommenders, like what business schools are looking for overall in terms of leadership traits and teamwork ability and other areas. But again, the ClearBit recommendation guide, I think it's like $9.99. I mean, this is not a high ticket price item, has all this stuff in it, even has some really good sample recommendation letters. And yeah, there's just a lot of really good stuff in there that'll help folks like this, you know, brief the recommenders and get them off to the races with solid, you know, solid letters.
Yeah, no, very good. And just finally, if the background is quant light, you know, if they've got a 740 GMAT and a 383, that they're smart. They're going to figure this stuff out. But if they're a little bit concerned about it and they want to be proactive in this regard, maybe the HBX or whatever that program's called, Graham, Core, or the MBA Math, just doing something like that. To sort of shore things up might be appropriate, and if nothing else, it shows you're proactive. You're not going to let the adcom be concerned because you're taking that step.
Right.
And I think that's a smart thing to do.
Yeah, and my thought would be focus on the apps and getting all that stuff together, getting your recommendations, you know, all everything together for these early deadlines in September, October. And, you know, maybe just indicate in your application that you signed up and you're taking HBX Core or MBA Math starting sometime in September. It doesn't, just signaling to them that you've actually taken this step might be enough to just show them that, wow, this person's really forward thinking and has a good head on her shoulders and knows what she needs to accomplish to be successful in business school. So, but again, yeah, really interesting candidacy.
Yeah. And finally, and I hate to say finally three times in a row, but she has, there's no need. I mean, I know there's no harm ever applying in the first round versus second round, but in this case, there's no urgency either. First round versus second round. So if she wants to spread her apps over the two rounds and, you know, work on this sort of MBA math or something like that, that's perfectly fine. She will not be an overrepresented candidate by any stretch of the imagination. So if she shows up in the first or the second round at any of the top schools, they will, that will be absolutely fine.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, obviously, with some schools, not Harvard or Stanford, but with some schools, there's a scholarship dollar pool that may be a little bit lighter in the second round than the first. But again, I think you're right. Like, it's not going to impact her admissions odds, that's for sure. So, in any event, thanks everyone for tuning in once again. You have now, you know, I don't know if our reviewer listening 6 months has gone for now 6 months in a week, but, you know, there's going to be, we'll have to give a reward out to somebody who actually manages to listen to an entire year's worth of these things, but we'll be back.
Yeah, we've done a year in a week, right?
That's right. Yeah, this is our 53rd episode of Wiretaps. So stay tuned, everyone. We'll be back in 1 week's time with another episode of Wiretaps. Thanks, Alex, for picking out these profiles, and yeah, we'll see you in a week.
Yeah, best of luck, everyone, and stay safe. Good luck.